Okay, thank you. I just said that I have the worst spot on the agenda. I'm competing with lunch. And the worst speaking engagement of my career was once to a room full of 2,000 educators at the Waldorf Astoria in New York, and lunch was late, and I had to speak. I almost had every fork and knife thrown at me. So I always remember that. Okay, just quick. You have a lot of my ideas in the paper, and I'm not going to read it to you. But I will touch on some of them and talk about some other things. And I don't know if I'm exactly going to address the topic that was just read to you, but I certainly will address a lot of the discussion that's been going on here today. Just quick background. I started out as a teacher in New York City. I taught in some of the lowest socioeconomic areas of the city, and I had great teaching experiences. I say that mainly because I was one of the lucky teachers who was an average teacher, I would say, when I began. And I became what many people said was a terrific teacher. And what made the difference is that I was very fortunate to have an arts teacher in my school who worked with me, who taught me how to integrate the arts into all of my teaching. And she did that, and we became... we became like a team, but it also, I had no idea about what to do before I started interacting with her. And this was at the beginning of my teaching career, 40 years later, you know, I'm dating myself, but we're still very good friends. She lives on the other side of the world, but we're still very good friends. And her daughter is my goddaughter. Anyhow. So who are we? That's how I started. I then worked for the school district in New York in federal and state programs, and I had the opportunity of a lifetime many years ago when Al Shanker asked me to come to work at the Teachers Union in New York when he was the president of that, to begin an educational arm for the union. He said the future of education is going to be equally important in terms of the quality of education as it is in terms of the bread and butter issues. And that was in the early 80s. I was a kid. And that's what I did. I built the educational arm for the union in New York City. And now I'm working. I retired. I was the vice president of the teachers union there. And I'm now working allegedly part-time at the American Federation of Teachers in Washington, taking some of what I did in New York and trying with difficulty to get other people to be open to incorporating more educational quality issues into what's going on in education. So that's who I am. Okay, who are the important people here? And Richard just touched upon it. I think he was reading my formal scribble. not really. But who are the important people here? The important people here are the 49.5 million kids in our public schools and their parents. That's our constituency. Those are the important people. Who are the people who need to be educated and influenced? Well, obviously the kids, but also their parents. Also the 15,000 superintendents out there, the 100,000 school principals out there, the 3.5 million teachers out there, and all of the elected officials at the local, state, and federal level, the media, which I'll get back to, and very importantly, my least favorite group, and that is the chattering class. And the chattering class, you know, as we call them, are those people who like to talk about and dabble in education, but never get their hands dirty, never roll up their sleeves, but they know better than everybody else, including the hedge fund people and a lot of the media and, you know, a lot of foundation folk and a lot of others. Okay. But they are influential, particularly in this era of the internet and blogs and all of that. Okay, so in terms of arts education, And it was very fortuitous. When I was at the Teachers Union in New York, before No Child Left Behind, before a lot of that, we passed a resolution, a formal resolution, in the very early 90s, saying that we were going to make arts education and the return of arts education a priority for the Teachers Union. And we did that because of two sources of input. One, the teachers were complaining to us and saying, we're losing the arts, we don't have the arts, we need the arts. And the other one was that, well, the parents. We had very, very close, good, strong relationships with parent organizations and parent groups. We worked together on fighting budgets and other things. And the parents, particularly minority parents, said, when I went to school, we had the arts. I learned how to play a musical instrument. I learned how to, you know, do music and dance and whatnot. And my kids aren't getting any of it. So those were the two places we were hearing this from. The Center for Arts Education came together, and I was very blessed, frankly, to be a founding member of that. And Richard, I'll leave the discussion about that to Richard. But the Center for Arts Education, when it first started 12 or 13 years ago, became was a service organization. And several years ago, Richard asked me to chair a committee of the board members. I'm still on the board with Cyrus. He asked me to chair a committee to develop a new strategic plan for the center. And the people on the committee basically did a great job, and we came up with a complete change in the direction of the organization, where the priority would go from being a service provider and a grant provider to being an advocacy organization for the arts. And that's what, under Richard's leadership, it's evolved into. So we are now really, we're still providing service, but of all kinds, but we're primarily an advocacy organization for what the original purpose of the Center for Arts Education was. And that is, we said that, you know, again, it's a local, you know, local to New York City, but it applies to everywhere. We said, well, New York City is the arts capital of the world, but it's not the arts education capital of America, and it should be. Okay, so. One other influence that I want to mention before I go into some specifics. I had a very amazing opportunity that, you know, one of those things in your life that you never forget. After 9/11, Bill Clinton wanted to spend some time. He wasn't, you know, he was recently out of office, but he's based in New York. He wanted to spend some time with the kids who were in the schools around the perimeter of the World Trade Center who were displaced to other buildings. They were doubled up. We took one school and put it in another school building. We had 60 kids in a class with two teachers until we got alternate spaces for those kids. There were 8 schools involved. And he wanted to spend the time with the kids who were right there. He insisted it be a non-media event. There was no coverage of this ever. Was never out there. He wanted to spend the time. And one of the things that, what he did was he taught. He went into rooms and he taught the kids lessons. He was a great teacher. Besides that, they were dazzled, but he was just great. I had the great opportunity I had is that his office had reached out to the school district and they couldn't get cooperation to help him arrange this. So they called the teachers union, which we had a good relationship with, and we did it. And I was the person who wound up being his, being with him for 3 days as he taught all of this. I was, you know, I don't know, I handled everything. So, but one of the things that came up, and it was from Clinton, in talking about things, he met with all the teachers and the principals and a bunch of parents from the schools, and they said, what do we do? How do we help? You know, and he talked about a lot of things, and he went into a whole discussion about, and it is from a non-teacher, you know, perspective, about the arts. He said, you know, you know, there's writing and there's talking and there's drawing and there's illustrating and there's writing, you know, plays and putting on productions and getting, you know, and putting together publications. He talked about bringing in, you know, dance groups and, you know, physical education and other things. But here was, you know, a former president of the United States giving this big talk about the arts, you know, as an answer to, you know, some of the issues that we deal with. I said, well, if he could do it, we should all be able to do it. But it had a very profound effect, you know, hearing it from him. It wasn't staged. It was just him, you know, spilling his guts. Okay, so as far as how we got to where we are and what you could do, which is what I really want to talk about, I'm not going to go through this in detail because I wrote it and you can read it, but I'll summarize basically. Cyrus mentioned this before, I did emphasize the role of the federal agenda, and I usually don't because education is supposed to be a local issue, but it is less and less a local issue. And it's mainly because of two things. One, No Child Left Behind, and the other, Race to the Top, which has come up many times today. Okay, and even though the federal government only provides about 8% of the funding for education, the influence has become huge. Okay, No Child Left Behind has basically, you know, put the focus, as you all know, I don't have to go through this in detail, on, you know, anything that's tested. If it's tested, it counts. If it's not tested, it doesn't count. No Child Left Behind has also, because of that, resulted in the narrowing of the curriculum. So what gets taught in most schools, particularly in urban schools, are reading and math, English language arts and math. That's what gets taught. Testing and test prep are the second areas in reading, English language arts, and math. That's what gets taught. How to take a test, how to pass a test, how to get from, you know, the margin to minimum proficiency. Because those are the ones that are easiest to raise your score. That's what's getting taught. And the diminution of arts education, foreign languages, science, social studies, physical education, they have just, you know, decreased. Okay. The more recent issue that has compounded the situation is Race to the Top, because even though education decision-making is supposed to be local, it has been completely taken over by the Race to the Top discussion, because states are vying for money. That's the only money out there of significance. People are changing their agendas to go along with what they're being told. And Race to the Top, basically, is about the business, you know. By the way, there are some very good things in Race to the Top. You know, I think it's a mixed bag. I'm not just poo-pooing it. But it's about the business model of education. It's about data systems. You know, it's about accountability. It doesn't talk at all about quality education. It doesn't talk at all about improving the involvement or the collaboration of parents and teachers and voice and principals and everything. It talks about systems, and that's what everybody's focusing on. It is very uninnovative. If you look at some of the actual Race to the Top applications, they're very much the same, because they're all trying to do what they're being told to do. There's a tad of innovation here and there, but not very much. And that has taken over all of the discussion and all of the, you know, policy making that's been going on. So we have ahead of us our last opportunity to influence this, and that is the reauthorization of the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, which is what No Child Left Behind was the last version of. And I want to talk about that a little bit, because that's an area where I think, amongst the suggestion of things that I think that we can do. Before I get into those suggestions, though, I just want to comment on a couple of things that I didn't take time because I knew I had, you know, more time, and I let everyone else go. But I just wanted to, I made some notes. On accountability, one of the things that I think we have to do, and this is where arts education becomes a very big thing, arts education is not part of accountability systems. And while we all agree that we need accountability, we need Right now, we have very narrow accountability. It's not looking at whole schools. It's not looking at whole children. It's not looking at all of the people who are involved. I mean, there has to be accountability at every level, going from the state to the district, to the school board, to the teachers, to the principals, to the parents, and to the kids, particularly at the secondary level. But accountability has to be all over. Right now, we have very narrow accountability. Accountability has to be in all areas of the curriculum, not only English, language, arts, and math, which is where it predominates right now. So it should not be, and that's something that we can affect. The other thing is, and a couple of people did mention this, people were talking. There was a lot of talk about equity and what was the word? Sufficiency?
Scarcity.
Scarcity.
Okay. And then somebody, I don't remember who exactly, mentioned political will. I think it was Dory. And I had written that down before she mentioned it, but I just want to reiterate that, because equity is a big issue, and I think there are major equity problems out there, and there are clearly scarcity issues out there, but there are political will issues out there, and political will is what, in the end, makes the difference, whether something happens or not. Whether the ideas are great, there are a lot of ideas out there, but as somebody else said, I don't remember who, it's the implementation that makes the difference. Because you could have all these great reports sitting on a shelf, pages turning yellow, nothing happens with it. Okay. So it's the political will that I think we cannot forget. Okay. Now, I'm going to go through some suggestions, and I've written them out so you don't have to take notes or anything, but I just want to comment on some of them. And they fall into four areas of what the foundation community can do. Now, I know many of you are from local foundations, and a lot of these, could be local, but a lot of them are more national. But I think some of the discussion we should have is how maybe we could come together and get some of these things to happen, maybe in consortia or, going to some of our friends and colleagues and whatnot. But they fall into four areas of the work that needs to be done. One has to do with research and data, and people have talked about that, so I'm not going to repeat that. I think we need to get very accessible, good research, pull together the research that's been done and the data that is out there, and package it better, because it's not accessible, okay? So some of my ideas relate to that. The second have to do with collaboration. We can't live in a silo. Arts education, and people involved in pushing, advocating for arts education need to reach out to other potential collaborators, educators, parent groups, civil rights groups. I'm not wearing my union hat today, but I'll say, teachers' unions where they're open to it, school districts, etc. So collaboration. Three, and this may be the most important one, and that is communication and education. We have to get out the word. We have to educate people about what the issues at hand are, how kids are being hurt by, what is going on, how they're not getting what the Constitution promises, them, a free public, free high-quality public education. And the last one, of course, is advocacy, which is, which will get it out there to different constituencies and advocating in all the areas we have to. So just to throw out a few, and I'm just going to touch on them. One of the things I think that would be very helpful for foundations to do is to provide grants to organizations that could facilitate placing stories, op-eds, PSAs, editorials, and whatnot in the mass media, getting the word out, getting it on blogs, getting it out there, and giving knowledgeable people who have the capacity to more access to writing. I have a lot of friends who are journalists. We fight all the time. But they say, we don't get a lot of stories on this kind. And, they said, tell us, have people send it in. Talking about a well-rounded education, how the elimination of the arts in particular is holding back kids from becoming fully well-developed, citizens, and critical thinkers. Okay. That's one. Another that I think could really be very helpful, and I'm not repeating some that have been suggested already, But working with nonprofits and advocating to get nonprofits and others to get on the agenda of a lot of national conferences that aren't about arts education. And I listed, you know, some NAACP, the National School Boards Association, the National PTA, La Raza, Council of Great City Schools, educator groups, American Association of Supervisors and Administrators, teacher unions, National Governors Association. If you don't get the word out, those are the groups where you get thousands of people coming. I mean, you get 3,000 to 10,000 people at these conferences. So work with some appropriate organizations, fund them to get a core of people going out there to get the word out. On ESEA in particular, because that's going to be the thing that's going to drive education in this country for the next 10 years, the reauthorization of ESEA. I think that a lot of people in this room and some others should ask for a meeting with Arne Duncan. Now, I meet with Arne Duncan regularly in my professional capacity, and I've raised the issue of arts education to him. And, you know, I'm a New Yorker, so I don't take any crap, you know. And I said to him, I said, you know, Arne, and I knew him from Chicago, not as well as some of you may have, but the Chicago, you know, colleagues here. But I said to him, I said, you know, you put out this great statement about arts education and how important it is and how critical, you know, it's a great statement. And I said to him, I said, what action are you taking to back it up and implement it? He said, well, I said, Arne, you're not telling me anything. I said, it's a bunch of crap. And I said, it's all rhetoric. I said, the president and the first lady have put out great glowing comments about arts education. The administration, you know, which we all fought very hard to get you into place, you're doing nothing, okay? Every time I see him, he says to me, I know you're gonna ask me about arts education. I said, that's right. I said, and the place I'm going to taunt you about it is in the area of ESEA reauthorization, because unless it appears in there, not as an allowable activity, but as part of what has to be done. So my recommendation is that a group of the right people be pulled together and ask for a meeting with him. He will do it. He meets with every constituency group when it's an organized effort. In other words, not one, two, three, but if you say, we as a group have a lot, you know, for coming from different quarters. The other thing that I would suggest that included in that, and I have failed in my own home district, you know, because I'm still a New Yorker, in getting this done, recruit some name celebrity people who can speak about their arts education and how it has led to what they are doing. Because whether we like it or not, celebrity is very, very important. And where do we have more celebrity than in the arts? You know, maybe sports, but that's it. Okay. So getting a meeting and putting down a lot of the issues and the things that should be done, I think could be very helpful. Funding organizations to develop materials for parents and school boards and others out there. There's very insufficient materials that are for, out there for parents. The largest group of kids in the public school system are Spanish speaking. We almost ignore them, frankly. And so materials for parents in particular in Spanish and, you know, where possible other languages. You know, we should be focusing on that. I included something about a DVD. Get teachers, parents and kids talking about the richness of arts education in making them who they are and making them, you know, the citizens, the college grads, the doctors, whatever, you know, the arts related, you know, employees in whatever they're doing. An 8-minute video. And give that out when you go to, you know, elected officials, when you go to conferences, when you get, you know, that's something easy to fund. It's a throwaway. Someone mentioned before information about the getting information about the most effective schools in the country that have incorporated arts education. I forget who it was. Someone mentioned in Delaware, Dory. In Delaware, you have two great schools that have integrated the arts and science, I think you said, okay? Well, get 20 schools and get a publication done about, you know, where you can include hard data. Remember, everyone is obsessed with data now. put it out there. It's not a big thing to do. You know, it's very easy to get them and identify them. That's something else to do. Arts-related careers. You know, you could incorporate it into the others, but that's a huge multi-billion dollar business going on out there. And working with Korean technical education organizations, unions play a big role in that. Private industry plays a big role in that. I mean, it's another area to look at as to, you know, getting some information about what could be done in terms of arts-related, you know, careers. I'm not talking about old hat vocational education. I'm talking about, you know, very high-level stuff. And the last one, and I'll conclude with this, is to convene a group of arts organizations and school district representatives and others to come up with a solid set of recommendations on the reauthorization of the ESEA as it relates to the arts and how it can enhance the entire next 10 years of preparing our almost 50 million kids to be get the education that they have a right to. So I will shut up with that.